President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ecology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 28th on the West Coast, now July the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in also on Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com. Well, if you've been following the news at all of a sudden, no one's finding any oil in the Gulf of Mexico. But there sure is a lot of Corex at 9500. Think about that. Do we believe this? They've been lying to us left and right. Now, the Globe magazine has published some interesting stories. They're talking about this all over Europe and in England, how BP has basically fraudulently represented the images that we saw of the oil well. We've been talking about that for 3 months on this show, folks. And now the truth comes out. See, we've been telling you the truth all along, but nobody reacts until they hear it from the mainstream media. And as I've said on many shows, we are the media now. They are just the poster boys and the lackeys for organized crime. That's all it is, organized crime. And we keep getting signs that everything's falling apart. The rest of the world seems to think that the Federal Reserve is bankrupt, but do we hear anything about that? No, they just keep printing up more paper and sending it to foreign countries and hiding it in bank accounts under the guise of giving out loans. A lot of interesting information will be coming up in the coming days and the next couple of weeks, I guarantee you. Right now, I'd like to invite back a very dear friend, someone I've known for a number of years now, has basically neutered my journalism. and by that, I mean just cleaned it up and made it something that you can understand. She and her late husband, Don Harkins, spent many an hour talking to me and going over things that I've written, things that I've discovered, and helped me piece my work together. I'm speaking about the Idaho Observer, of course, and I welcome back the co-publisher and co-editor of the late Idaho Observer, my good friend, Ingrid Castle. Ingrid, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. Well, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. I was on your show, I think, earlier this month, and now the 28th creeps back up, and yeah, I've had a very full day. Very interesting.
Well, yeah, it has been a while. I think you were on the show on the 6th,
that's right.
3 weeks ago, something like that. 3 weeks and a day.
Yeah, the day after Edgar Steele's 65th birthday.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And we talked about that on the last show, and I know that you've been trying to keep us apprised of what's going on in that situation. You have anything that you'd like to share tonight?
Well, actually, we had an interesting powwow after a hearing that was held today at the Kootenai County Federal Courthouse. That's in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and so he was transported from the Spokane County Jail for this hearing, but the judge, actually a new magistrate, did the whole thing telephonically and by a computer screen. It was all really bizarre. We were waiting and waiting. Everyone was just sitting there quietly and patiently waiting for at least 20 minutes, and she magically appears and shuffles paperwork around and just, you know, robotically reads these additional charges that were apparently handed down from a grand jury. and it's really strange to us. We're still trying to figure out how these grand jury indictments are happening so rapidly in his case, because you know, the sheriff and everyone claims that it was a federal grand jury indictment, which we're all questioning the whole validity of a federal grand jury itself, because and constitutionally, a grand jury is supposed to keep a check against the federal government. It's a grand jury of citizens questioning actions of the federal government. So this is like, you know, and here we have Edgar Steele, who is charged in a plot to hire someone to kill his wife and mother-in-law. And the only evidence they have is a voice recording, and people are all over it. Patriots across the country are all over it because of the voice cloning technology that's been used to frame people for years by, you know, the CIA and the FBI, et cetera. So, in fact, I was on Truat's program, and he had that technology demonstrated to him 10 years ago by an ex-CIA agent, and you know, when he heard his voice used, I mean, it sounded just like him making a drug deal. It sent chills up and down his spine. And, you know, obviously anyone that hears their voice, you know, committing some kind of crime or alleged to plot some kind of a crime, it's chilling. And for Edgar Steele, it was. It was really a chilling experience. He thought, my gosh, you know, I'm an attorney. And any jury that hears this, I'm sunk. You know, they don't know me. They don't know my situation or my family. But, you know, they psychologically profiled the family. It's very clear. But they are definitely getting worried because Cindy, his wife, is not playing ball. But they're very intimidating. And so we had this powwow after the whole thing, you know, because that's why, you know, they're doing this kind of hit, because they think they can intimidate her, but she's getting strong, and I kept encouraging her, this is why you need to have a network of us helping you. My friend Greg Pappas talked to her about, you know, the book Power Versus Force. It's very important that you own your God-given power. All they have is force. They don't have any of the light from the Creator that gives you the power over them. You know, they don't have it. They're missing that element, and so all they have is force.
Well, it becomes quite clear that they're railroading him and really setting him up for, or they've set him up for this.
Just by the fact that
they're trying to force her to comply.
It's constant fear and intimidation they're trying to instill in her, and making it like she's the victim. And they know that she's not convinced about the tapes. And this is before Ed talked to her. I mean, as soon as she heard the tapes, she had questions, and they're trying to twist it around as though she only had those questions after witness tampering. They're calling the fact that Ed tried to counsel her on how to respond to the tapes as, you know, witness tampering. And so he's being charged with actually four additional charges. The paper initially said on the 21st, three additional charges, but he was read off four additional charges. In possession of explosive material to commit a federal felony. He was never in possession of a pipe bomb. And then transporting it across state lines to Oregon. That was on Cindy's car, unbeknownst to him. All of their information, their dates, don't jive. They kept saying that it was put on her car on the 30th of June, and that he the 30th of May. She actually left for Oregon on the 28th of May, so that doesn't jive. And he did make a trip to Oregon. And all of that stuff is just none of the dates corroborate with what actually happened. And
are they allowing him to present any evidence so far through his attorney or whatever? Or
well, he was in solitary confinement pretty much for close to a month. Right about a month, because we were his first visitors on the 13th of July. So Yeah, he's been totally secluded, was barely able to make phone calls out to his family, which, you know, his children. It was very interesting yesterday. Kelsey, the youngest daughter, she's 20, and she flew in from Dallas, Texas, is was convinced from the very get-go, and her boyfriend was also convinced from the get-go that it was totally false. He's 100% innocent. They just knew, you know, because, I mean, mm-hmm. Kelsey's very, very close to her dad. She's most like him in spirit. So she flew up, and she was trying to get the siblings and the mother, you know, to get more involved. I mean, I think they're all in a state of shock. They don't know what to think. And her sister, Nicole, actually lives in Oregon and lives near the mother-in-law and is right down there in that area with Cindy's mom and her kids. So she felt really uncomfortable with the situation here. You know, there's FBI's agents are telling her that her father has planned to kill her grandmother, you know. It's all really wild, and she didn't know what to think. She hadn't contacted Ed. She felt very uncomfortable about the situation. Kelsey ended up really talking to her enough where she made the trip on her own to come up here, and they visited together Ed yesterday for a full hour, and it was really a powerful experience, a good unity of the family, and Nicole now is 100% convinced of his innocence. So and it's not like the mother doesn't think he's innocent either. She's, you know, she doesn't know exactly. I mean, she had to fire her attorney. He wasn't helping her. Let me just read some of these charges.
Was she surprised by that?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is just taking them for a loop. She's been in crisis for 10 months now. Her mother went through extensive surgeries. Mm-hmm. Ed's gone through 4 surgeries. I mean, he nearly died in November over this weird, strange heart attack thing where this valve to his aorta just popped. And, I mean, he should have died. It's a miracle he lived through that. But he was on a respirator, you know, life support for 9 days in the same facility as Don Harkin. And he was really screwed up mentally from the anesthesia. People can tell you a lot of stories of what drugs and anesthesia will do to you. And he was just so desperate to get out. He was convinced they were killing him. And he was so desperate to get out, he left against medical advice, different than Don. Don left against medical advice, but he was very, very weak and in no shape to be in the house alone. So since Cindy was dealing with her mother in crisis in Oregon, she got their son, Rex, to come up and at least hire a nurse full-time to be with Edgar in their home. That was in December. And then he had surgery in March. He had a weird embolism, I'm sorry, in his nose. I mean, all this weird stuff. You know, anyway, he had a surgery at the end of April and then one in May. Anyway, he had all these surgeries going on. And, I mean, this is a man that's not in good health who always has provided for his family. And he would never leave his, you know, children without a parent. You know, I mean, Cindy's younger and in better shape than he is. So the whole thing is pretty wild. She gets it. So in court today, Ed said, yeah, there's no money for an attorney. I mean, because they're anticipating him maybe getting another attorney to deal with these charges because, you know, the federal defense attorney isn't going to do him any favors. But he doesn't have any assets. They're all locked up. And Cindy's in the same boat. I mean, they froze their bank accounts. They stole all their valuables out of their house, gold and silver, you name it. It's all gone. And they won't release them. And And so it was announced in court today that they're going to release the assets to Cindy by Friday so that she can function, because they're in, you know, desperate financial straits with bill collectors hammering them, and, you know, it's serious.
Well, you know, what goes through my mind, and I'm sure there's a lot of legal definition, and people are going to say, well, they can do what they want because a federal crime has been committed, but they're alleging a federal crime was committed.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken him out of state. Isn't that interstate kidnapping?
Well, no, they're claiming that that's why they have federal jurisdiction, because he set the crime. You know, they have the audio recording that the crime was to be committed in Oregon. There's several holes with the whole thing.
Yeah.
In that they have her talking. Okay, this is all supposed to occur June 11th. Well, she talked to Edgar like they do every evening on June 10th. She is not an early bird. She does not like to get up super early in the morning, and she probably stays up kind of late. As a And so Edgar knew the doctor's appointment was scheduled for in the afternoon. Well, the alleged hit and the recording and everything was supposed to take place early in the morning when Cindy takes her to the hospital. Well, she would never be taking her to the hospital in the morning, and she set the doctor's appointment for in the afternoon. So this is all on June 11th. She gets woken up out of bed, so she's groggy, by two FBI agents pretty much interrogating her and claiming that they're saving her life because she was supposed to be going to the hospital. So, I mean, this whole recording, everything about it is, it does not fit with reality, and they're trying to desperately rectify their story to fit with reality, and none of it does. None of it adds up. It's all cuckoo. So there was a group of us at a friend's house near where court was today. We all met afterwards, and it was his two daughters and Cindy Steele. And for the first time, it was really good that Cindy was able to share with everyone, people that are part of free-edgars-steele.com website, as well as people with the Ron Davenport case, because Ron Davenport is a patriot that is also locked up at the Spokane County Jail, and they were, you know, cracking the judicial code, the masonry involved in it, and, you know, filing habeas corpus. But they, I mean, I'm just saying, they filed a lot of paperwork and have figured out the game. And so they were, you know, saying all the things that really need to happen in Edgar's case. They were very helpful. And anyway, it was a great meeting of minds. But it was good that Cindy was able to share all the unbelievable anomalies in this case to an audience that never really heard it that way for the first time. You know, she's trying to rectify the facts, and no one knows this information but her.
Yes.
So we're, like, encouraging her to get out of the closet. Can she do public speaking? So it's real sweet. Brad Cree, you know, before he left, he's saying, have you ever done public speaking? And she goes, well, no. You know, Ed always did that. That was his train. He says, well, you're going to need to start getting used to doing that. And just imagine everyone in the audience naked, and it'll make it a lot easier.
A question that enters my mind, and I'm sure the listening audience is wondering, in terms of when this alleged recording was made, in other words, this, you know, what was this Larry Fairfax character wired, or did he just tape record?
Well, that's the whole thing. It was allegedly tape recorded on June 9th, and he he went to the FBI allegedly for the first time right after that, and then they did the hit on June 11th. So it's all like June 9th. He does this recording, turns it in on the 10th. And, well, where's the space for the federal grand jury? See, this is what the news reports have said. No one's ever really counted it. And we're like, wow, this guy was working on their property since he came home from the hospital from his heart attack. We're talking about busted pipes that happened while he was in the hospital and Cindy was in Oregon. She neglected to turn the water on, you know, and then we had a lot of cold, wet, really, really cold weather in November, December, and so there was, like, water all over the house and stuff like that, and he's, you know, they used to call him Larry the Plumber. But anyway, he was, you know, called to take care of a lot of that stuff, and they had him do other errands, you know, and feeding the horses and et cetera. So anyway, the general consensus is that this plot to gather information or, you know, work with the feds on this hit could be happening as long back as December. But the news reports allege that he was, like, approached, and he decided to seal the deal with Ed and tape record the whole thing and then turn it in. Anyway,
yeah,
they're actually, it seems clear to us that they're worried about the case because it is really shaky. And one thing, I haven't really had much communication with Cindy. She doesn't want to give me her phone number. She ends up being fairly reclusive. So I've been fairly frustrated with her because I said one of the first things you do is if you're not tape recording conversations with each FBI agent, you need to journal everything. I mean, you should have been keeping a journal from day one. You know, dates, times, places. He said this. He's intimidating me about this. I mean, you need to document everything. And she hasn't been doing that. Although she has a fairly good memory, I still am concerned that, you know, some of those things have not been done that should be to cement the case. But then again, their case is so weak. It's clear that they're worried.
Yeah. Now, the fact that they ripped up floorboards and tore walls apart to get at all this money that he had stashed away, and I understand it was gold and silver and rather large amounts of money. It wasn't like he was desperate for money. And so the motive is kind of weak, too, wouldn't you say?
Well, they lived fairly lavishly. They put a lot of money into the property.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, in terms of liquid assets, you know, I'm sure that he had maybe some investments. Who knows if they were stock market things or whatever. But I think money for a lot of people is tight. I believe they were still paying a mortgage, you know. So, you know, and this is the other thing that's really a bizarre thing in the case, is that he allegedly did it for life insurance money. That's what they're claiming.
Yeah.
That he wanted life insurance money. There wasn't a policy on her or her mother. There was no life insurance. I just found that out today. No, I mean, it's just one thing after another. I mean, I think everyone's jaw was just agape and dropped. You know, just the whole, we were all just like, wow. It was, I mean, Cindy was recounting one unbelievable piece after another of that they don't have a case.
And that's why I'm asking these questions, rambling. Because it seems to me that they're overlooking something, and really everything hinges on whether they can get her to turn state's evidence against him.
Exactly, and this is the whole thing, because if they have a hostile witness, they don't have a case. So that's why they're always trying to work her over. And that's why I'm saying, Cindy, this is why you need this group for support. You need friends here to support you to stay strong, because your whole family is at stake unless you are a hostile witness. They don't have a case. If you stay strong and firmly convicted on your husband's innocence, they don't have a case.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there was ever a time to stand up for your family and your country, now is the time for her.
Well, we all emphasize all kinds of points in the case, so that she got it. And so she has a lot to think. You have to imagine, she's been in intense crisis for a long time, so it's like, this was like a final straw for her. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure. I mean, I can't even imagine being in her shoes. I mean, just the pressure of dealing with Don. I mean, I've been in crisis also for, you know, 11 months now, but, you know, it's a different level, you know. I mean, for everyone, I mean, it's a different type. but you're dealing with life and death constantly. You know, I mean, your husband can die, your mother can die, you're back and forth, and you are like the main person, then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, your husband is still pretty sickly and barely recovering. He's going with his friend to, you know, pick up some lumber, and all of a sudden the FBI want to talk to him, and the next thing you know, he's arrested on these trumped-up charges. And it's just, it's such a shock because it was something that wasn't anticipated. And what was interesting is just last week, maybe 10 days now, anyway, that Kelsey got this letter, but Cindy was going through a pile of papers that was left behind the house, not even taken by them, looking for some unpaid bills because she was, like, getting these bills in with late charges, and she couldn't even find the original bills, you know? And she had no way of paying them, but she was just trying to figure out stuff, you know, to have some leverage for releasing their funds. I mean, you know, who's being punished here? I mean, this is a, you know, a marriage in this state, and so the property is equally hers, too. So it's not like they're just, I mean, who's being punished? So she actually had hired an attorney that thankfully she fired because he was doing zero and wasn't even returning phone calls. And so you can just imagine who he's working for. So we're trying to help her to just get strong enough to do the thing on her own. She does not need an attorney, really, for really anything to demand, you know, her basic rights and the, you know, freeing up of her assets. It's hers and Ed's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things are progressing, and we're all, you know, being positive, and we're just, I really think she's going to, you know, come to the table with all this, with the encouragement everyone gave her today, you know, because they don't have a case. It was really clear. She knows it, but, yeah, like I said, they psychologically profile people, and, it, you know, it's that level of intimidation that has you crack. I mean, you know, it's easy to revert to fear. And her fear is of the federal government after what they did to her husband and how they're pressuring her. So,
now,
that's why she needs support.
If I can interrupt you just for a second, one thing that keeps popping up in my mind is that, okay, there's an underlying reason why all this is occurring. And it has to do with his being outspoken about certain issues.
I think it has more to do with the human trafficking investigation he was doing. He was doing the whole intense. He had connected all the dots to these Ukraine brides or whatever. I mean, we're talking women and children, and the connections went all the way to Israel and top people, you know, and the Bilderbergs and CFR like that.
Mm-hmm. And I keep getting flashes of the ADL being behind this,
mm-hmm.
as far as an agency that has put pressure on the government to do this.
Yes, because all of these different groups out there. There's VNN, the Vanguard Nationalist News, and Stormfront, and there's some, you know, consistently ugly type of blogging going on regarding the case, convinced that he's guilty. I mean, it's like all these groups that generally, anyway, it's ugly. I mean, there's videos posted. Cindy is being accused of being fat and ugly, which she is absolutely not. Like he wanted to get rid of her because she's like fat and ugly. That's not her at all. You can see a picture of her and the family at free-edgar-steele with me. And anyway, it's just hard for her to be in the limelight right now, I think for anyone, when their husband always took that role, you know, and now she's, you know, having to be in the spotlight and everyone's questioning her and, you know, making assumptions about her. And a lot of it is, you know, because nobody's had really any, contact with her. I mean, she's just kind of looking at everything from behind the scenes and, you know, would like to rectify things. So that was one really good thing today, is that everyone feels now that we could be working directly with her to correct any errors on the website. She's really wanted to make sure all the factual errors were cleared up. And there are. There's, you know, the, as minor as they might be, there are things that should be accurate. Why not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially in the face of all their, you know, inaccuracies, we should be as accurate as possible.
Yes.
So there are little things like that talked about.
Now, was Edgar at all in touch with Nancy Schaefer, the former state senator from Georgia, who was murdered?
No.
Okay, he hadn't been.
No, as far as I know, there's a lot of people that have done this kind of investigation, but he was specific on what was going on in the Ukraine. With human trafficking, and her investigation was strictly her own state with Child Protective Services, foster care, and prostitution and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Karen Schaefer, the late Karen Schaefer, had been investigating that and spoke publicly. In fact, I played a clip of her speaking on this whole topic a good month and a half ago, I think, and everybody that read and heard about the case said there's no reason for these people to commit suicide. They were taken out. They were murdered to silence
right.
them.
Nancy Schaefer was a murder-suicide. Her husband was going through cancer treatment. I guess he was somewhat on the road to recovery, but they were very strong Christians. They would never commit suicide. They had a very solid marriage, and so the way they had the news report is that he killed her and then killed himself. You know, the murder-suicide.
So. Yeah, yeah.
And no, that's just not, would not have happened. All their children know that was impossible and, you know, whatever. And, but yeah, we have all of these interesting, weird things, well, interesting, weird things. It's not really the right terminology. We just have all these. To me, it seems like the dark forces are absolutely pulling out all their stops because they're dying out. I don't think they have a chance with the dimensional shift that's going on with the planet. I mean, a lot of us are all feeling it. Feels like the whole energy is, the frequencies are moving forward, and they don't seem to be able to have much of a chance as we progress into fourth and then fifth dimension, as far as I can tell. I feel it. I feel the shift, and a lot of us are, and it's really pretty amazing, the energy. But we have a legislator that's a friend of Dawn's and mine, Phil Hart. We did the People's Income Tax Guide with him. That was a publication we did, you know, back in 2003, 2004. Anyway, he's a representative now for our state, and they want to oust him. And the main reason for ousting him is that there are two incumbents in his area that needed to be gone, and the names are Mike Jorgensen, a representative, and Dean Rasmussen, another rep, and they've been in too long and were all part of the corruption, et cetera, et cetera. So there were two guys, Steve Vick and Vito Barbieri. Anyway, they're part of our Ron Paul Revolution and really great guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot of campaigning for them. And so they beat out the incumbents, and the fangs came out. I mean, you should have seen the local newspapers. I mean, obviously, you know, they had certain reporters in their pockets, you know, people that do the guest blogs and stuff. And they brought up that Phil Hart is not just a tax protester, but, you know, allegations of unethical conduct while he was a representative, and that he was using his position to improve his case with the IRS. Anyway, it was very ugly. And then they formed, all of a sudden, practically overnight, an ethics committee. And so this ethics committee, their first case is who? Phil Hart, and he has this case tomorrow. He had to go all the way to Boise, 10 hours from here, to be heard before a panel of fellow legislators on ethics violations. And anyway, he wrote about, he tried to summarize what he's been through, and he really did a great job. It's very eloquent. I was just going to read it because it's a really tight summary. He said, Phil Hart said, a very taxing process. After fighting what I believe was an unconstitutional federal income tax 6 years ago, I capitulated, filed returns, and have since then paid $120,054 in combined state and federal income taxes, including the interest and penalties. I was also working toward a settlement with the IRS. What derailed the settlement process was becoming a target for an audit. My experiences provide a case study of why we need to get rid of the income tax on wages and salaries. Years ago, I became interested in the income tax and wanted to understand how it worked. I thought it would be easier to research the purpose and intent of the income tax rather than study the Internal Revenue Code. I focused my research on the years 1908 to 1913, as this was when the income tax amendment was debated. Because I discovered so much new information doing this research, I wrote a book about it. And that's his book, Constitutional Income, Do You Have Any? My challenge to the income tax included petitioning the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court would not hear my case. The late Mr. Paul Chappell, a former attorney with the IRS Office of Chief Counsel for the District of Columbia, said of my petition, quote, reading Phil Hart's work is like returning to law school. After decades of practice as a tax attorney, Phil makes me feel as if I'm a student again. And then after reading my petition for the eighth time, another tax attorney, Mr. Arch McCall, wrote me and he said, what you did was brilliant legal work in your petition for certiorari. And just so you know, Don and I were very involved with Phil at the time, edited his book, and actually, Don did, and I did a lot of work and spent a lot of time on this petition of certiorari for the Supreme Court with Phil. So that was, you know, something we were very involved with, his thing there. Anyway, in 2004, I filed 1040 returns to get caught up. Suddenly, I found myself in an IRS audit. I had to sue the IRS to avoid turning over the names and addresses of those who purchased my book, Constitutional Income. I was represented by the Center for Individual Rights, a Washington, D.C. public interest freedom of speech law firm. As far as CIR can figure out, that's the Center for Individual Rights, I was the first author in American history to have the government demand I turn over such names and addresses. The Center for Individual Rights won these lawsuits for me. However, when the IRS issued their audit report, the IRS denied all my business deductions for 8 years. The amount of denied deductions totals $300,000. Why? Well, an IRS employee told me, when you don't give us everything we ask for, you get all of your deductions denied. For them, this isn't about the liens or the money. It is about getting the name. I believe I have a First Amendment right to protect the identities of my readers, just as a journalist has a First Amendment right to protect their sources. I also believe in protecting my readers' Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures. These are principles worth defending. During this four-year audit, I provided the IRS with all my canceled checks, receipts, invoices, and so on, boxes worth. Yet these deductions were denied solely for political reasons. Losing $300,000 worth of deductions inflated my now purported taxable income and the tax imposed thereon. My expenses for engineering and drafting personnel were denied. office rent expenses denied, office supply expenses denied, book publishing expenses, including editors, artists, and printing expenses denied. What small business can operate with a zero dollars in business expense, with no business expenses? Protecting my readers from having big government snooping into their lives has increased my state and federal tax liability by about $125,000. When the state tax commission got their hands on this IRS audit report that reflected the $300,000 in denied business deductions, they wanted their cut of the inflated taxable income. After the Supreme Court declining to hear my case, I began making tax payments. But of the $120,054 I have paid since then, not a single dollar of these payments has been used to offset any of the lien amounts. It's a nightmare. I would happily trade places with any of my detractors who somehow think I've gotten a good deal. Regardless of whether or not the income tax on wages and salaries is constitutional, most agree on one thing. It is an inefficient and privacy-invading tax. It is also subject to manipulation and abuse. Is it then wrong to fight for my legitimate deductions and to stand on my principles? And that's how we end it. So I just told everyone that, you know, the meeting is tomorrow, and he has a website. You can read all about the ethics documents and what he's dealing with it. H-A-R-T, the number 4, legislature.com. It's all run together, and it's Phil Hart, and his last name is H-A-R-T. So it's Hart for Legislature with the number 4, but .com, and it's really pretty fascinating the lengths that people will go to oust someone who is ethical and moral. So we all faxed the committee. You know, several of my friends signed a letter, and we just addressed the committee that saying that we wish to convey to you that we have investigated Phil Hart's tax issues and are unified in our support for his representation of the people in his district. The charges against him are not based on facts, so we are counting on you to take the time to investigate each charge thoroughly, as we have done, and make sure there's evidence substantiating each charge, which, of course, there isn't. It's all conjecture. Representative Hart has proven to be an advocate for the citizens of Idaho, continually fighting for legislation that protects our rights and freedom. He has often been pitted against special interests and paid lobbyists who would like to see him removed from office. We are thankful that Representative Hart has the temerity to meet these challenges year after year without wavering in his strong ethical and moral Christian principles. Our founding fathers would be proud of Representative Hart's strength and courage. If anything, the Ethics Committee should give Representative Hart a medal for his principal positions while serving the citizens of Idaho, and that we signed our names. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there was no one else that was really standing behind, you know, really unique legislation. I mean, even Alex Jones commended Phil Hart for putting legislation in place to keep those radiation machines, what do they call them, you know, the scan, full-body scanners, you know, from our courts and airports. It could not be used as a primary screening device. You have to go through the normal checks, normal screening devices, before any of those kind of things can be used. And it was, you know, anyway, that totally passed in our state. We're the first state to have any such legislation.
Wow. And the income tax, constitutionally, is for corporations to pay.
Yes.
It wasn't a personal income tax.
It was never to be on wages and salaries.
Yes, exactly. So,
and his book, all his research corroborates that. We printed that in the People's Income Tax Guide that you can still see online at, I'm forgetting that one. I'm not towards the back room, but we did the People's Income Tax Guide, and we had, you know, a specific website, .us or something, anyway, and it's still there online, the document. But it's a real tight thing, and you can always go to his website and get his book, Constitutional Income, Do You Have Any? And it is a brilliant work. It really is. I mean, he went all the way to England or Great Britain or the UK or whatever you want to call it, and to do his research. He Yeah, he traveled all over the country, you know, digging up original material from the 1908 through 1913, right when they were debating the whole income tax.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mention, and intentionally, I didn't mention when I was introducing you, your role in another area. If we can shift gears for a moment here, mm-hmm. while we still have some time to talk about
time.
Another topic that's dear to many people who are confronted with the issue of vaccinations. You are the founder and director of VacLib.org, which mm-hmm. is basically on the forefront of this fight against all these vaccines. I heard there's now a I heard this through a source who knows of a doctor who alleged that now they're telling everybody who's got some kind of a cough that they have whooping cough.
Yes. In fact,
have you heard that too?
Yeah. Mary Taco actually put out a newsletter that was great. It really needed to be done because this actually happened close to a year ago and they tried to soup it up and it failed. Now they are adding to it. The state of California has claimed that there is a huge epidemic of whooping cough. According to the California Health Department, there have been 910 cases and 5 children under 3 months old died. And we understand that a lot of children, you know, well, we're talking about babies. Babies under 3 months old are often very susceptible to dying of whooping cough. I had it as a baby. I did not die. And that was before my mom even knew about the value of vitamin C. So, but anyway, many of these babies, you know, I mean, there's, what, 5 children under 3 months old have died. That's really nothing compared to all the other deaths from SIDS and other things. And that's 910 cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one of the things that they never look at or mention is how many of those 910 cases were fully vaccinated. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we hear this all the time. We had an outbreak in the 5 northern counties of Idaho, and it was 256 cases. And of those 256 cases, 81.5% had all of their DTaP shots. That's diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis, because they don't ever give pertussis singularly. It's combined with diphtheria and tetanus toxoids. And then, you know, Alan Banks, it just happens to be that Alan Banks is the same man that's Edgar Steele's very close friend and witnessed the entire arrest. Well, he's been on the board of the Panhandle Health District for years, and at a talk that Dr. Horowitz gave here back in 2000, he stood up and said during that 1997 outbreak up here in our county, the figures were even more shocking. 85% of all the documented cases of pertussis had 4 out of 4 of their DTaP shots, and 15% had 3 out of 4 of their DTaP shots, and there were 0 cases among those who had 2 shots, 1 shot, or 0 shots. So it kind of leads you to believe that the shots contribute to the illness in the first place, but they're sure trying to get a lot of people to be a vaccine with this triple antigen vaccine. And now they're saying they want all pregnant mothers to get the pertussis DTaP booster while pregnant. And it's, you know, they're really pushing all these vaccines, you know, the flu vaccine, and if you have the Rh negative factor, you're going to get the what do they call it? The Rogen. Oh God.
I'm not familiar with the name.
Anyhow,
of it.
Yeah, it's. Oh my gosh.
Ask me something.
I think all, yeah, but it's the thing. You know. Anyway, it has lots of mercury in it. And,
yeah. I was going to say, ask me something about the Gulf of Mexico, Goldman Sachs.
Oh, so. I know. No, I'm like I swear, I think I'm how everyone's getting lapses in their memory, but I know it's so. I just never had the Rh negative factor, but I know that that's been an issue with a lot of women. And Dr. Sherry Tenpenny and Sherry Knockin on our list, they have documented people that have been able to do fine without it, and that there's reasons to not do their recommended, you know, injections for if you're Rh negative.
Well, if a mother got that shot when she was young, she would be immune, right? If this vaccination is what they claim it to be, number one. They tell pregnant women not to smoke, not to drink, but it's okay to get vaccinations, right? It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Well, the thing is everything that the mother does while she's pregnant, just like you said, affects the fetus. And so we're having injections right into their lymphatic system, going into their blood. This goes directly to the baby. The baby's literally receiving blood transfusions on a regular basis via the mother. So keeping the mother's lymphatic system and bloodstream as clean as possible and nutrient dense, would be the optimum, not injecting poisons. So that's really, Mary Taco's big concern is like, my gosh, the new DTAP formulation without the mercury contains very high levels of aluminum, which we know is toxic to the developing brain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's toxic to elderly people. That's why they have Alzheimer's. But there's now policies in place requiring new moms and dads to get the pertussis booster shot before taking the baby home from the hospital. Both mom and dad are supposed to have a booster shot. Now, this is really unheard of because it's well known in the schedules that the DTAP shot is so reactive the older you get that they only give it to young children. It's not recommended for prepubescent teens or whatever. I mean, it's just, it's not like, I think over 8 years old, you're not supposed to use that shot at all to anyone over 8 years old. And now they're telling parents to get them before they leave the hospital. I mean, this depopulation agenda via vaccines is just shocking.
Yeah, and the nanotechnology.
And
I suppose Dr. Henry Nyman is somewhere lurking in the background waiting to start another campaign on this one, huh?
Well, yeah, it either has, full microchips, but they all have these nanochips now, and that is one reason I think they're really pumping up the vaccines now, because they want to make sure everyone is thoroughly chipped. And that's a huge aspect of mind control and cutting off people's soul connection, especially at this time as the frequencies change on the planet. Our connection with God is just that much easier to maintain and access. And, if you have total connection with God and the Holy Spirit and, you have that total peace and comfort, you don't have any fear at all because you're divinely protected and guided at all moments, and you know it deep in your soul, well, they don't have any control over you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything. And it's all a ruse. And when enough people figure that out, well, it's going to change things quite radically on this planet. So they're really doing their last hurrah here. Because they're not going to be able to.
They've been doing it for some time now, and it's becoming more and more evident that they're not even competent at lying. They can't even tell a lie that stands up. It's easy to debunk their lies.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over again, we're doing that. Go ahead.
That's fine. You're doing a great job. I would like to know some of your more recent research, but you probably shared last night that.
well, let's see. I may have talked about some of it. This situation in the Gulf is all smoke and mirrors for what's going on to set up cap and trade and simultaneously try to stoke up a race war at the same time, because this long-legged or short-legged Mac Daddy, I call him now, in Washington, the usurper, who has no business being there, other than he's part of a corrupt criminal organization. The trail between Goldman Sachs and Chicago and CCX, Truot brought that aspect out, and Shore Bank, which the Clintons and the Obamas are involved in. This is all to set up cap and trade.
Right.
That's all
exactly.
This is.
Exactly.
And the criminality behind the scenes, the paper trail is there. I mean, This is obviously a co-partnership with the CIA, the KGB, the GRU, Russian agents, Israeli agents, American agents. You know, we've been infiltrated by thousands of spies, thousands and thousands of spies who are working through a clique of universities. They're using the names of these universities, if for nothing else, as cover. Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, Montclair State College, Kansas State University, and then the usual ones that you see, because they allege that these people who are PhDs in plasma physics were running the high frequency trading programs for Citadel Investments in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And for Goldman Sachs. There's a guy who was arrested, they say, the FBI arrested him last a year ago, July 3rd, at the Newark airport, returning from Chicago, having been offered a job by a startup company. And I'm alleging that the startup company was masterminded by Goldman Sachs to divert Citadel's attention on what was happening. This guy, Sergei Alenikov, allegedly stole millions of dollars of software, uploaded it to a German website, encrypted it, and then it was picked up by the owner of the website in England. And this was supposed to have been the algorithm codes, the algorithmic codes for their proprietary high-frequency software. Now, we're talking about guys that are all in science. This Alenikov, I found out, is supposed to be an expert in fluid and thermal dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And, that could apply to the oil company. He's written a book on soil formations, and he's supposed to be arrested for stealing millions of dollars of the software. He's got a book coming out October 14th.
Right.
It's crazy what's going on. I mean, if this is a smokescreen. What they did, the play they did, was to set up the market so that they could take down the big stockholders of BP and Transocean stocks. And there were 11 companies, 11. There were 11 deaths at the well. 11 companies got burned really bad. Some of them had over 3 million shares of either BP or Transocean stock.
Wow.
Four of those companies had large amounts of both the stocks. And, of course, they're holding on to those stocks. They're not selling them. BP dumped 44% of their stock. Goldman Sachs dumped something like 33% of their stock. I may have the numbers reversed, but the CEO of BP, who was also the CEO of Goldman Sachs, Peter Sutherland, dumped about $2 million worth of his stock. And we know that they put out a private, and I say private, the whole world didn't know about this. They sent out a circular through Eurex in Frankfurt and Zurich. And this alerted them to the fact that the Transocean stock was going to go on the auction block, we'll say, as of April 20th. The circular went out on the 14th of April. So they're announcing that that you can buy futures. You know, you can do puts, and the hint is, you know, do puts on Transocean, which is what they did. It's what Goldman Sachs did. It's what this fabulous Fab Touray employee from Goldman Sachs allegedly emailed his girlfriend. We're going to be making big money with one failure in the Gulf of Mexico. And he said something to the effect of suck that birdies and plants or fishies and plants, something to that effect. So the trail was there. We knew that. But this Aleinikoff, who was allegedly recruited to work with Teza Technologies, this is set up to be under the umbrella of the Alpha Group. This is the group that's controlling all of this stuff around the world. And it's a multinational organization. They keep coming up. In fact, the companies say they set up their alphas. The work that this Mikhail Malyshev did for Citadel. He's the guy that allegedly founded Teza Technologies. Mm-hmm. By the way, which had a different name, it was called Pelagicus before that.
Huh.
And they named that after the Pelagici cormorant, the black bird that suffered in the Valdez spill.
Hmm.
Those birds are naturally black and have a oily kind of sheen to their bodies.
Really? Huh.
Or, you know, to their feathers. And within a short period of time, they changed the name from Pelagicus to Teza. What's interesting is if you do some research on the word Pelagicus, you find one of the world's largest distributors of seafood is in Dubai, and their name is Almaya, their owner, the Alpha Group. So you dump a bunch of core exit in the Gulf of Mexico, and all the people that sell seafood there suffer financially while they're making money hand over fist out of Dubai.
Gosh.
And that's the company that's allegedly trying to take over BP share of TNK-BP in Russia. And the outlying areas where they have oil contracts. So that's the kind of stuff that's really going on in the background there.
Right.
You know? But they're not showing us pictures of that. Okay.
No pictures.
No pictures. And they're not talking about it, Ingrid.
Well, what do you think about this China spill? All talked about
I think it's
right
more
now.
More the same stuff, actually. You know.
Okay. Huh.
You know, they're going to try to push this to the extent that they start requiring the energy sources to shift into more environment-friendly ones. And, of course, we've been saying that forever, but they have to make a disaster so that they can make a bunch of corrupt money from it. They have to see people die. They have to see the ecosystem destroyed. That really gets them off, we'll say. I think I can say that on my own show, can I?
Yeah. Oh, God.
So
it's actually not funny.
But behind the scenes, CCX, which has the Obama's name all over it, this is all about carbon credits. The carbon credit exchange.
Right.
Okay, which is cap and trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling cap and trade crap and fade.
Wait, say that again. I want to hear that repeated. That's cute.
I'm calling it crap and fade.
That's very cute. I'm writing that down. I got to remember that.
And also, don't forget, we now have the NAABP, which is basically running the Gulf Coast area of this country.
Wow.
So.
Oh, man. You're just full of them tonight.
We're just not getting the truth, Ingrid. And believe me, I've connected the dots. You know, these people I'm naming, I can go through a whole list of characters that played these roles behind the scenes. And the FBI investigated this. Do you think if they were investigating somebody that they could figure out that they were an international spy? Okay.
Well, you know, it seems like they don't solve crimes. They create crimes.
Yeah. This is obviously a smokescreen, you see. The arrest of Aleinikoff was to have a scapegoat in case Goldman Sachs got caught doing what they did, you see. This was a smokescreen. This guy went to schools that don't exist. Mm-hmm. These schools that they have on these websites don't exist.
Yeah.
And I spent weeks researching this, okay? And then we have listeners of the show in Russia, and they're telling us the same thing. They're saying that school doesn't exist.
Wow.
Or these people, you know, or these people are Israelis. These aren't even Russians. You know, they're using the same name for three different people who are part of their spy network. And they all went to phony schools.
Mm-hmm.
None of them have the jobs that they claim they have. And yet I'm able to track down pictures of them, one with the European Space Agency. But he says he works for Russian Defense Department.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe he does, but he works for the European Space Agency, too.
Uh-huh.
And he has the same name as the guy from Citadel and Taser Technologies. And there's another guy affiliated allegedly with Adobe
mm-hmm.
and IBM. But he went to a school that doesn't exist.
Wow.
Okay.
I mean, this is all part of their bio.
Yeah. There's their LinkedIn
check out
bios.
Their,
you know,
yeah, but I mean, you just go to check out their credentials, and then you find out that you can't even check their credentials because the school doesn't even exist. You can't even interview anyone.
Yeah, they're aliases. Or the school, the address of the school is a travel agency
mm-hmm.
in a dilapidated building, you know, which is mm-hmm. travel agency. You know what that is. You know,
yeah.
That's they're funneling drugs and moving yep. slaves, you know, people that have been kidnapped, women and children. That's what's going on.
It is horrible.
That's what this is all about. You know, we have to keep reminding ourselves this is organized crime, and the SEC is totally complicit. My God, they took the name away from Ponzi.
Mm-hmm.
Ponzi, Charles Ponzi was calling his organization the SEC. They took the very same name. They said, this is a great idea. He's not allowed to do it, but we're going to do it. We're going to do it so the people think that this is legitimate, so that we can play with their money. And we can steal it
mm-hmm.
under the pretense that the stock that they held became worthless. How do you make it worthless? You steal the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's yeah. just a shell game is all it is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And there are people listening and say, well, I made a lot of money in the stock market. Nothing happened to me. Well, you know, we're bankrupt. This country's bankrupt.
Oh, seriously bankrupt. I want to know how people have thought about living without any money. I mean, we are so dependent. We live in such a money-sistic society. And I've told people, you know, things are changing quite rapidly here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really nothing to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be changing to outside your comfort zone, very likely.
Yeah. I had Michael Tellinger on the show last night, Ingrid,
uh-huh.
and we talked about a concept of contributionism,
mm-hmm.
where we take care of each other and we take care of this planet. Now, that's a pretty
right.
lofty thought.
Well, this is exactly what I'm reading. I've been reading the Matthew books, Matthew communicating to Suzanne Ward, his mother, while he was on Earth for 17 years. And I really am getting a lot of value out of them. They resonate really well. I mean, there's a couple little things that, you know, a little bit difficult, you know, what he said about Obama and stuff. But, you know, overall, I feel really strong about the content, and it just absolutely resonates. And when I first picked up information about the books, and I was reading an article that someone had sent anonymously from Mount Shasta, California, I got chills up and down my spine and started weeping, and I just knew, you know, Don wanted me to read them, you know, because I don't know. There's like a distinctive energy that Don would give me after he passed. And I haven't really had a lot of contact with him because he's moved on. But he was
mm-hmm.
with me a lot when I was really pretty much freaking out without him being here. It was pretty emotionally distraught. But I'm much stabler now than I ever have been. I still am, you know, in recovery mode. I have a lot of health issues that I feel I need to get, you know, clear on and address. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of those types of books, you know, I had read a number of years ago, I don't know, 10 or more years ago, I had read Neil Donald Walsh's Conversations yeah. with God.
Yes.
And he made a statement in book two that George W. Bush was going to go down as one of the best, if not the best, president in the history of the U.S.
Really?
Yeah. Now, this was according to what God had told him.
Yes.
Okay. So I don't know what God certain people worship. But
I believe, yeah, I get it. But I also found a lot of value in these books.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you shouldn't, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of
truth. Well, it's not like channeling per se. I mean, she's getting these. She was told that she would be getting these telepathic communications from her son 14 years after he died. And when it happened, it kind of startled her. And she's very, very honest and forthright through her questions and just who she is. And, you know, has that kind of face that you trust, you know. And anyway, I went through this a similar grieving process with Dawn as she did with Matthew. So I was very intrigued by her first book and then just kept reading. So I'm on the third book now, which is Illuminations for a New Era, Understanding These Turbulent Times. And, yeah, they're perfect timing for me right now because it totally corroborates some of the experiences I'm going through.
Yeah. You know? Well, Ingrid, we have to wrap up, unfortunately, but I'm glad we got to talk about a few different topics tonight, and I want to have you back, as you know, this coming month.
August.
Yeah, August is around the corner here.
It sure is.
And so.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on the show, Dawn. It's always good to touch base with you and. It's hard for me to keep out of, doing local politics. It just is. I just feel like there's too many things that need to be addressed. I mean, there's always someone out there that needs to know that they're loved and supported, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm still working on, cleaning up this place and working on getting a roommate. But, in the meantime, I'm processing, and I think a lot of other people are too. I mean, everyone's working on making adjustments in their life, and they just need to continually wake up in the morning and know that the Holy Spirit is going to be guiding their lives that day, and just affirm that by asking, you know, the Holy Spirit direct their day. So, because, you know, things are changing so rapidly. I don't know. I wake up in the morning without any anxiety, just total peace. Knowing that things are, you know, changing for the better in the long run. Doesn't seem like it all the time.
Yeah. Well, we have to keep our faith and our trust in God and God's word. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
People are being bombarded with really evil thoughts and evil situations. Evil images, and it's very apparent that the people's whole focus, the majority of people, their focus is on the material and what they look like. They don't look inside. They don't look to see who they are, and they don't really care to know. It's as if they're afraid to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so shows like tonight where you're talking about real life issues and expressing your spiritual views as well are valuable to those that know, because you just confirm. And eventually, or occasionally, there's someone out there listening that says, you know, I want to look into this, or I want to consider this, because there are people looking for answers. And
right.
And
I just got a call just the other day. They had read an article from our newspaper of 10 years ago that martial law is coming. And she read it. It's like, oh, my gosh, this was 10 years ago? And she just took it upon herself to call, and then she found out why she really called, and she had chills go up and down her spine because she needed all this other information that I had, and she wanted to know. And it was like this connection, you know, that she was praying about. And she's been listening real intently from her prayers, and she says, my gosh, God's been telling me, you know, to change my eating habits. I can't eat meat anymore. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, she's having all these experiences. And And, you know, she's just like a regular, normal person, you know, that didn't know anything about vaccines being bad, but she went to take her daughter last year to get the H1N1 shot, and she had the strongest voice tell her, no, don't do it, and she left.
Good for her.
I mean, but she's, you know, she's very prayerful. She knows that, you know, God's been with her in her life. And now it's more prevalent now than ever. I mean, she's open, she's prayerful, and she's hearing clear guidance and direction all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
so,
that's what we want.
More.
We want to encourage people to have those experiences, mm-hmm. and you know, the right way. I mean, what is the right way? Well, you have to look within yourself. You have to operate from the heart, not the head.
Right.
That's the biggest battle for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a discussion for another show, Ingrid.
Right, it is. It is. Because you and I are both in our head a lot. I got it from my parents. I don't know where you got it from, but anyway, I'll sign off. But thanks so much. Yeah, we'll just do a heart-centered show next time, okay?
All right, let's do that. All right, Ingrid Castle, thank you so much for being on the show. Folks, her website is VacLib, that's VACLIB.org. If you want to read up on the whole vaccination issue from top to bottom, that's the place to do it. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com for broadcasting this show. Also, I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night, when my special guests will be Drew Malone Raines III and Dr. Gay Larned. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.